Mr. Carter, Reel 20. Did you go out on a working party whilst you were there?
Well, to one end, I did. But there was one incident. The railway from Yugoslavia and Italy run close to the camp, and German soldiers were withdrawing. And one fired at us from the train, missing. He didn't hit anybody. I think he'd be caught martial because they pick him up. That was one incident. As you say, towards the end, I said to my mate, I said, we're not stopping in here when the war's over. I said, we'll make our own way back because we'd heard of these here camps in Italy who'd waited for to be relieved and they were taken up by the Germans. And, we knew there'd be a lot of red tape if they came to take us back, you see, so we said we'll make our own way back. So we volunteered to go up for take wood for the stove in the camp. We took all we had, all we did group. And we went up these hills and we drifted farther and farther away from the guard, the only old men. And finally we were out up on the hills. That night we went into one of these barns on the hillside and we slept there. And I think they must have seen us up above. But there was a young girl came down this hill. She was singing away to herself. We then made our way to the top of this hill to another farmhouse.
Were you still dressed in your British Army uniform?
Yeah.
Had the guards disappeared from the camp at a period given time? Or just the guards had disappeared as the Allies got close to you?
No.
You just came out without any trouble? You just got away?
Oh, we came out under guard.
But then you're off from the wood,
and
yes.
We cleared off, and there we go back to the camp and report he was missing. Our next move was up this hill, and we came to this farmhouse. There was an elderly Austrian woman there, and she let us cook some, you know, the red cross passes, and, you know, she let us cook some along what we had, and then we went up into the barn to sleep the night, up in the loft up above, and towards night we heard a lot of voices, and this young girl came in, a young blonde girl, and she started to undress. She was going to sleep down below. I thought, well, we're all right tonight, right? Well, whether there was a shout from the house, and away she went, like, the mother must have shouted and told me to. And it seemed it was a brother. He started to play the devil. Because he'd been away working somewhere, and he'd come back, and these visitors were there, I heard him on about gefangers and Stalag, and I was understanding a bit of German, you see, and I said to my mate, he's after us, wants us out of here, back to the Stalag. Because he could understand it, like, if he was caught harbouring with his prisoners, he would be shot. So next morning we set off again, and we got to another farmhouse. And we went in there, and there was a woman there, and there was two young they looked like gypsies. I think, well, I suppose they'll be forced labour, and they're young antibodies. However, we decided to make our way back. And we came down from one side, down, there was a road running down, then up again to the side. So we crossed at night, And he had a hell of a job climbing up the other side. Anyway, we got climbed up, and of course we were making our way back to the camp, but the camp was on the left-hand side and we were on the right-hand side, where the village was, this village was. You see, the river run separate the camp from the village, the river. So we were making our way down, we come to the farmhouse. We sat outside the farmhouse, and a couple of German soldiers came, had the rifles and everything. They went straight into the farmhouse, took no notice of us. So we came to the conclusion, war was finished. So we then made our way down to the village, went through the village. And I remember Austrian, he was an educated bloke, elderly, and he said, what's going to happen to Austria now? What's Churchill going to do about it? Well, I cheered him up. I said, oh, you'll be all right, you're all going to be free again. I had no idea. We then joined a party of refugees. There were some Americans, two Americans. There was even an old German. And we were making our way down this road, and we stopped for the night. And we lit a bonfire. There were some houses, and they had all these railings on them. I don't know what they thought, but we took all the railings and made a good fire. And this German, he'd come from Italy, I think, and he had a bottle of wine. And so the Americans said, boodle, boodle, they were stuffing up the line, passing it round like, and poor old German was laughing, but the Americans, I heard one say to the other line, so he cut his throat. Well, I wouldn't have allowed that night, but I think they'd gotten a bit drunk, you see. Anyway, we made our way down. There was a German truck, there was all refugees making their way.
Well, these displaced person there, yes, people.
They were making their way down the route.
So there'd be different nationalities in them?
Yes. And there was a German truck there, and he handed out a tin of meat for between two. We got down to where this river was, and this bridge had been blown, and the Americans were repairing it. And there was a blonde woman there, and she wanted to go back to, I think, Yugoslavia or something, and she was asking where the Russians were. And I said, no, I don't go back up there. And as the Germans came down, German soldiers, the Americans collared them and set them to work on the bridge.
So the war at this point really was over?
The war was over, yeah.
And the camp would have been relieved.
It was relieved, I heard later on, by Americans, yes. But we didn't wait for that. A few of us, we got a truck, commandeered a truck, and we got as far as Salzburg, I think. Salzburg. We passed all these Germans with their belongings on a cart, and pulling it themselves, you know, on the roads. And we got to Salisbury. And our next move was to Munich.
Had you been put into the hands of the American forces to get you, move you back towards home by now? Are we still moving on your own?
We moved over on our own to Salisbury, and we were put into this camp but I'm a bit hazy about this. I know we went through Munich. We saw that was in a hell of a state. We went by a truck, I went through the streets where the German stood on the steps, it was all bombed and all shot. And I think we encamped at Munich Air Dome, Munich.
How did the Americans treat you?
We didn't come in contact.
We oh, you didn't come in contact. You weren't.
Which I'm taking all prisoners. They were doing about 70 miles an hour with a load of prisoners in back, you know. Germans were hanging on. They were crowded in. I saw that. I wonder how, you know, what Americans are like for shifting. I saw all that. Well, we got to Munich Airborne, and that was badly bombed. Again, I heard a voice up above. There was a couple of blokes, and one shouted down. He said, "I know you." I said, "I know you." And he was a 2nd Battalion, 2nd Battalion men, like. And one had been a boxer. And I got talking to him, and he said, "You know that CB with me?" He says, he doesn't want to go home. He's gotten on with a German girl, and he wants to stop here with her, like. So he'd have to go home anyway. So then, he decided to fly us to live. And
had you got the new uniforms and spruced up by now?
No.
Still in your fighting, fighting togs?
Yes. From Munich, these Dakotas came down like a swarm of birds. And you run and you got in a Dakota the way you went. And then I landed there in France. And I think that's where we got fixed up. Our next move was into converted Halifax's bombers. They flew us to somewhere in south of England. And there we were given our pay and ration books and leave. And send them our way.
Yeah, must have been pretty pleased at this point in time.
Oh, yes. Yeah.
And what? How much leave did they give you?
Well, there was quite a long leave. They didn't want us back for a long time.
Had your parents been informed that you were a prisoner of war? You weren't missing, presumed, killed, anything like that, were you?
I have a telegram that was sent, notice from the war officer that said I was missing but believed to be a prisoner.
It must have been a worrying time for them.
I think they had them listen to what they call him.
The Pope, was it?
No. Even the propaganda that he was stopped under that.
Lord Hoho.
Lord Hoho. Mm. Oh, I went to listen to him because he used to give prisoners names out, didn't you?
Some used to come out through the Vatican, I recall. Names through the Pope's administration. But they got to know that you were a prisoner.
Well, Red Cross, you see, as soon as your name was taken in the number, you'd have to go to the Red Cross then. But before that, you could be shot at anything, you see. But once you were listed, it was our German responsibility, because you were under the Red Cross then.
What time did you get back to England? What date?
It could be about in May, I should think. Not sure.
Midsummer.
I would have leave all the way to September, something like that, about 3 months.
How did you settle down after all of the hard times you'd had, and even into lying in a bed for a change? Did you settle in well?
Oh, I settled in all right, but I think I fell asleep once, so I went to the pub and I came back and I travelled all night, you know, on the train, and went out and then I was asleep. So I had a good reason to fall asleep.
How were you received when you arrived at home? Did your parents know you were coming?
No, in fact, we would be some of their last prisoner of war to return. Because then in Germany, further down was released before us, you see. And I think they were getting a bit worried. Because my mother told me, she said, your father said he had a bad dream, he dreamt about you. He said something's happened to you, you know.
So they must have been overjoyed to see you.
Oh, yes, yes.
Did the street turn out for you when you arrived home?
No, but my brother put a party on. And then when it was time to go back, you see, I wasn't more substantive. So I lost my 3 stripes. They let me have it for 3 months. And that. But when I returned, I was a private again, you see.
Where did you return to?
Hockley, camping Hockley. And they gave us a bit of training, sorted us out, and I ended up on the Hockley railway station. On the RTO staff, that's, you know what that is, going through movement control. I couldn't understand the train time agent books or anything like that. In fact, there was a young ATS last came, late at night. She said, I missed the train because you had to stamp the cards, you see, to say you've been there. I said, where are you going? Well, she was going to Bradford, but the place she was going to was Eck, Eck. So, and she said, Eck. I said, oh, Eck. we got her away the next morning, but you had these coming in, they would miss the train, and you stamped them. And of course, I did me so many hours, and then I caught the train and went back to Northallerton. I was supposed to lodge in York, but I dodged them all.
How long were you doing that?
Oh, about 2 or 3 months, maybe 2 months.
Then what happened to you?
Well, your number came up for game on.
Have they asked you to stay on?
No. If I returned the stripes, I might have stayed on, but when they did that to me, I said no.
So what date were you demobbed?
I think it was somewhere around Christmas. Because I was one of the first to be demobbed, you see.
It's Christmas.
I had a high number.
Christmas 45, would this be?
Yes. Mm.
What was the demob process?
Process was. Went to a demob centre in the north. I told you about this overcoat on the bed, didn't I? Well, the process was, you went to this place for demob, and you were given a civilian suit and a tunic, and then you could either hand your top coat in and get a raincoat, or you could keep your army top coat.
And your great coat.
Your great coat and keep that, but you wouldn't get a raincoat. So as I said, I thought to myself, mine was a new great coat. I thought, well, I'm going to keep that and have a raincoat as well. So I went home and I got this here little great coat that I had as a cadet. I got my suit, then I moved to the counter where you landed your greatcoat in, and I slung it onto the bench there, and the bloke behind the counter said, what the hell's this? I said, it's a greatcoat. I said, and there's the man who issued it to me, which was true, because it was Major Clapham. We'd been a draper, he was in charge of the demob, you see. He really stood there. I said, no, he issued it to me. I wasn't telling him how he did. So he took it and gave me a raincoat.
Did you get a medical when you finished? Prior to being finished?
Yes, I think we did. Because I had to have glasses after that. My eyes weren't so good with being in that camp. And I've got the arm rings glasses now. My eyesight's still good enough yet. Yeah.
And gratuities for serving so long?
Oh yes, I got a sergeant's gratuity, which was really nice.
Do you remember how much it was?
I think about £100. A sergeant. Yeah.
And did they give you so much pay, or did that cease immediately? You demobbed. You weren't paid for so many years in addition to the gratuity.
Well, you got your money what you've been in prison and war camp.
Now they paid you that.
Yes, they paid you that. Yeah.
And being a regular soldier for so many years, did you qualify for a pension?
No.
An army pension?
No.
How did you miss out on that?
Well, you had to have 18 years or 21. I only had 13. But I did get a letter from the War Office pensions. It would be in about 1946. And it said, they thought it was very unfair that such as me, you see, I was a regular soldier, I'd signed on for 7 years with the colours and 5 years on the reserve. Of course, I'd lost my 5 years on the reserve, and I thought it was very unfair, and they offered me a small pension, which at that time was 15 and tuppence a week, which was good money then and there, after just that there, with a bit of back pay, and it was for life. And it also qualified me, if I wanted, to join the Chelsea Pensioners, because you had to have a... doesn't matter how small your pension was, as long as you had an army pension, you can join the Chelsea Pensioners, which if I'd been in bad circumstances, I would have joined them. It's now risen to about £80 a month, so I've done better with that than if I'd got my reserve pay. I don't think if Conservative government had been in, they would have done a thing like that. Because I remember the First World War veterans, I've seen them in the street with their medals up, the pipsqueak in Wilford, begging in the street, selling bootlaces, playing their mouth organ. It was terrible to see after the First World War, how they treated them then. But thank God, with the Labour going, we didn't see any of that. We didn't see any of the Second World War men on the streets. So that's what I always say about the Labour going. Well, they did a good job for Second World War men. You call them what they like, but this is all forgot by the younger generation, but I can go back to them days, you see.
What was your views on medal winning in the war and the award of medals?
Well, my brother told me towards the end of the war, medals were allotted to certain battalions, you know, so many to each battalion. And he said that towards the end of the war, he said, where I was, he said they were going round and asking who they could recommend for a military medal. Because they had these spare.
Did you ever come across in your experience anyone getting a medal which you felt they didn't deserve?
No, I didn't.
Most men earned what they got.
Yes. I suppose there was some instances if you were well in with an officer, he would recommend you. There was. I won't mention his name. But there was one said to be, he saw this officer making his way back, and he caught up with him, and they came to the arrangement, he'd recommend him put military medal. Now that was from some of the lads that I don't know, but I'm not really still alive today without both mentioning anything.
And there must have been far more who did just as much but didn't get a medal.
That's right. Depending on the officer. You had an officer, yeah.
What are your best memories of army life and your army career?
Well, I would say India. Although when I first went there, I hated the sight of it. It took me a couple of years to get acclimatised. It got mixed in with it, and I really began to enjoy it. As I said, I wouldn't mind stopping in India, but I had to make a choice. I knew we either had to go and fight the Japs or come back and fight the Germans. So I made the choice of coming back to see my family, and I knew that it was the Germans who were going to fight.
And where did you start work when you came back? At the end of the war?
Well, I first started, I got married, made a mistake there. funny thing, I met one of our lads from India. I think he was on York Station, I was there. I spoke to him and said, I made the biggest mistake in my life. He said, I got married. And he said to him, so did I. I didn't. No, I started there. I went down to Belper in Derbyshire, where my uncle was. And he put me up and I looked for a job. And I got started as a postman. Now then, my wife, they got as a... There was a doctor there, wanted a man and his wife to live in. So she came down and maid, and I was postman, and I was down there about 9 months. It wasn't a good job, because when you start at post office, you're given the worst, because you're at the bottom of the list, you see. And it was a split shift. You started early in the morning, and then you went back about 5 o'clock at night till 8 o'clock. It was split shift. Wasn't very good. I remember the old bloke who took me around. He was an old postman. He'd be turned 70. He took me around, and we were clearing the boxes in the Belfer, and this man came up with a letter. And he was just getting the letters out into his bag. And of course, he could have took this letter off him and put it in a bag, but he said, put it through the letterbox. Silly old boy, you see. Now that rule was brought out. You didn't accept letters, say you were in the street or anything like that, and put them in your pocket. You could forget about them. And also, if it was lost, they could come to you and say, well, I'll go to that postman. See, cast a blemish on it, was to safeguard him. But actually, there and then, that letter was going into his bag. So he was safe. But he said, put it through the letterbox. Then he closed the letterbox. And then I used to go out for two or three days. We went delivering. I had two bags of mail then, because in them days, all the police, agricultural workers, dustmen and all that, were paid by money.
Cash.
In a red-chested letter. You had all these. Now, it wouldn't happen today, but we went out, and these two bags, and I had to go around the cul-de-sac, which brought us back, you see. And then he said, there was a butcher's shop there. He said, you can leave your other bag here, in the passageway, and go and do the cul-de-sac. Oh, it wouldn't happen today, would it? with all that money, but that's what we did. And I carried around that, did that round, and however, I decided to go on.
And you came back to North Island.
Mm-hmm.